in my lifetime, well, in the time that I've supported Juve since I was 8, we've been in 6 finals and lost 5 of them. Wow. And that's the last 5.
Yeah. We have to realise where we're going. There ain't going to be such a thing as home and away one day. Like, we just got to accept it.
European, like, Super League.
Exactly. It ain't going to be such a thing. The football's just going to travel around the world. They're already doing it with the World Cup now.
Yeah.
Like, putting Euros it in different countries and the Euros and that.
That was interesting. I think Spurs for him was his next stepping stone. You know, players, I think before players reach a big club, they saw Spurs that is that kind of club where you go.
Is that
to
a slice
Spurs.
Shot as well? From that I think Spurs, I was with you until I realized, hang on a minute.
Hello and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast. Myself, Jordan, your host. You know how it goes by now. I have another fantastic panel of football fans this week with me on the pod, starting with one of our regular Arsenal fans. Basil, what are you saying?
I'm good. Not after this weekend, but nope. Hey, I'm still healing.
You're still healing, yeah?
still healing.
Well, get the plasters out because there's going to be a few more wounds to cover over the next few weeks, I'm predicting. But just come on the pod this week anyway. We're also joined by United fan Josh. Also healing.
This weekend was actually really good up until yesterday's shocking performance.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so yeah.
Otherwise,
I'm good. I wasn't expecting great things anyway. So
even against Brighton.
Let's not go there.
It's like that. And making his debut on the Football Fans Podcast, we have a Juventus supporting fan here. Francesco, what are you saying?
Buonasera. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Serie A finally kicked off. Finally seeing Cristiano make his debut in the league without a goal.
But he's there.
And we won.
And you won. That's the most
important. So happy days.
We're going to talk about Italy and Serie A in just a little bit on the pod. And I just realised I've brought no drinks and snacks for you guys this week. So sorry, didn't realise.
You can share my water, it's
okay.
Fine.
Yeah, I've just realised I've been busy. So apologies, guys. We will be doing a fantasy football update later in the show. And we'll be revealing who is bombing so far and who is doing very, very well. I'll give you a clue. I'm doing pretty well so far this week on the pod, but we'll get to all that later on. Let's kick off with some drive-bys, guys. For your first drive-by, Francesco, what we do is, at the top, I'll ask each of you a question. Each of you have 1 minute and 1 minute no more to answer that question, and the rules are simple. You cannot be interrupted by anybody else on the panel.
Okay.
I'll start with you, Basil, first drive-by. Tell me about Kante's new role and how you see it manifesting itself this season.
It's a bit weird with that role because he has the energy to sort of thrive in the role. I think he does have the facets to do so. I think he's a good passer of the ball. Mm-hmm. He's quite intelligent, and obviously he sort of understands the runs that his other teammates make.
Mm-hmm.
My only issue is sort of, will he get enough assists and goals? I don't think he's sort of that inclined to more or less contribute to Chelsea in that kind of manner. So it does pose a question as to how well can he sort of develop in that role.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess for him, it only makes him better because he's learning a new facet to his game, and it can only improve him as a player.
Okay. We'll stick with Chelsea, Josh. Their new keeper, Kepa, what have you made of his first two games this season so far? I'm not sure if you've watched too much of him, but what have you made of him, and do you think he will be a success this year?
I saw him against Arsenal, and I'd seen him play a little bit before. I mean, he's a good keeper.
Mm.
He's talented. He did make that error for Mkhitaryan's goal, though, which was like, you know. But overall, he's very good on the ball, and Chelsea, like, sorry, want to play out with the ball, and he's very comfortable. Like, it was very apparent, very... contrasting that on the other side of the pitch to check, like, it was a clear difference. So, I think he'll be all right.
Okay. And Francesco, there is possible disruption to an NFL game that's meant to be at the new, or it's going to be at Wembley this year, where Tottenham want to move to. Fans already paid money for their season tickets and paid more Spurs fans because of they were expecting to be in their new stadium within the next month. Rival teams are having to kind of talk about how they're going to move their games because of Spurs. Should Spurs be docked points and fined for delaying their stadium?
Says the Arsenal fan, of course. No, I don't think so. I mean, I think they were a bit unrealistic with how quickly they wanted it done. It's such a massive project.
Mm.
Such a big stadium. So many...
God, it's all right.
So many random things they're putting in there, like these cheese room and pumping all this beer and the see-through tunnel that people can watch. I mean, there's a lot to get ready, and the safety aspect, which they fell on,
yeah,
which they are using as the excuse. I don't think they should be docked points. It's just the way things go.
Is it acceptable though that you know, they, I think everybody knew that it was an unrealistic deadline they were giving themselves to be in there, and they tried to rush it through to charge the Spurs fans more money. Should they be punished for this?
I don't think you can say for sure that that was the case. I think you need to set deadlines that are sometimes hopeful in order to keep people on their toes, to get things done as quickly as possible.
Fair enough.
Unfortunately, it didn't work out for them. No, okay. I think, but the issue of them holding the fans' money, I think that is an issue.
Yeah, no, I agree. We're going to talk about that more in detail. On next week's pod, because I think they're getting away with murder and taking liberties. Let's kick off, gentlemen, with our first talking point of the pod. Let's talk about Serie A. And I want to ask you guys whether you think Serie A is finally back. Now, we're all the same rough age, I'm assuming, in this room. And I think we all probably grew up with Serie A as one of, if not the leading league in Europe during the, you know, mid to late 90s. And it went for a bit of a, you know, bit of a poor period of, you know, the top players leaving, the money being elsewhere. And I want to know if it's back now, because it seems to be a very exciting time for the league. I'll start with you, Francesco, as the Italian and as the fan of an Italian club in the room. Let's kick off with your team. Let's start with Ronaldo. That was the big transfer this summer. Is Ronaldo going to Italy the confirmation for you that Serie A is a big league again, or is back in the big time again?
I mean, I'd like to start by saying that Serie A never went anywhere.
Okay, you would say that.
Obviously, obviously. I think it's from a commercial point of view, this is a big step. Mm-hmm. You know, the next FIFA will have Ronaldo on the front of it in a Juve kit. That's massive. You know, when you come to Serie A, you talk about pre-Calciopoli, when the whole corruption scandal came out, and post. This is the first time since 2006, when Italy won the World Cup, Juve got relegated, Milan got top points, etc., Fiorentina, that we're back to those glory days of the late 80s and early 90s that you spoke about, the Football Italia, the Golazzo days, you know, that James Richardson represents. So, yes, you know, the Premier League has been at the forefront in terms of marketing football worldwide. It's not necessarily the best football, which is shown by the amount of sort of European titles that haven't been won by English teams. Yet Juve have been in the Champions League final two of the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. So, and Roma did all right the last time. Yes, we're not as dominant as we used to be, but the Spanish and the Germans have been the predominant forces.
Yeah.
But now it's just going to bring in more money. Ronaldo, obviously, there's all the stats relating to the kit. I mean, when I'm wearing the kit now.
You are, yes.
FYI,
yes,
everyone, yes, yes, in Radio Land. it took me refreshing the page for half a day before I was actually able to get onto the site.
The demand was that high.
Wow. And I think it was a kit every 47 seconds.
Okay.
50 to 60 million in the first day.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, Juve only get 10 to 15% of that, I believe, with how the shirt deals work.
Okay.
That's huge.
And also, is it significant that the Italian league managed to get the most marketable and name brand player on the planet,
yes,
at a time when the national team didn't qualify for the World Cup? Is that significant at all as well?
That's funny, because I've never correlated the two things. The Italian national team is a very odd entity in the sense that they win despite not being the best. When they win, they make do. It's like this band of brothers thing. Mm-hmm. They just somehow managed to pull out of the bag, like in 2006, like in 1982 against the Brazilians, that best team to never have won the World Cup, who we dealt with 3-2 in the court in that second group stage, and Maradona's Argentina. So our national team doesn't necessarily reflect what's going on at home.
Yeah.
But
it's a big coup, isn't it?
It's a massive coup. But I'll tell you
what, get Ronaldo.
It's funny when he scored that overhead kick against us and was emotionally touched by the immediate standing ovation. Mm. I laughed with my mates on a WhatsApp group. Watch how we try and sign him now.
Okay.
And that was the spark, and that's been admitted by Paratici, one of the directors. Okay. That was the spark to start the move.
Yeah.
And yeah, of course, because he's going to attract other people. He's going to make Juve better. The players around him are going to see the quality that he has. But also, the other teams are going to need to step up too.
Yeah.
Your Romas, Inter and AC, the sleeping giants. Mm-hmm. Napoli, who have really come to the fore. Yes, they've lost Sarri. They've got Ancelotti. We'll have to see how that goes. They won their first game this weekend, coming back from 1-0 down against Lazio away. Never an easy tie. So, you know, this will have an effect of dragging everyone up, bringing more money in. But I think the concerning thing for me, just to wrap up before you take it to everyone else, is that despite Ronaldo, BT didn't renew their Serie A rights. Mm-hmm. Why is that? I mean, it's on 11 Sport now, which is a streaming service. Yeah.
Did they not renew, or did they just lose out? I'm not too sure.
Well, I would have thought that they were outbid. Okay. So yeah, I suppose they did lose out, but they chose not to
go that extra mile. Yeah, that is interesting.
But that is a good point. But even in Italy, the foreign rights, Ligue 1 get more money out of their foreign rights than Serie A do at the moment.
Wow. Mm.
So I think we'll see. It's over the next 3 to 4 years that we'll see the knock on effect. There's an immediate knock on effect for Juve. Mm. But Serie A will see it over the next 2 or 3 years, and the likes of certain players that have come. Nzonzi and Justin Kluivert and people like that come in Serie A. I think those are positive signs for me.
For the longevity of the league in the next few years. Basil, I was trying to think of the last time I saw an exciting transfer to the Italian league. And correct me if I'm wrong here, I went back as far as the Brazilian Ronaldo. Can you think of someone since then that league has managed to get that's on anywhere near as exciting as this Ronaldo and this transfer?
Funny, it's the two Ronaldos.
Josh, same to you. Can you think of when was the last time that league managed to get someone as exciting as Ronaldo?
I don't think they have. I don't think they have.
I couldn't think of anyone.
I think the last big one was Ronaldo, and the next big one is Ronaldo.
Yeah.
And yeah, it seems like the other leagues are sort of dominating, sort of bringing in the bigger names and sort of marketing their players more effectively than Serie A have. So obviously in Germany, in Spain and in England. And I think marketing has been an issue in Italy. Maybe that's due to the scandals of corruptions that has gone on. And maybe they've had to sort of clean their act before they can sort of, let's say, okay, let's push the league to the forefront worldwide. Maybe that's an issue. Maybe that has played a big major factor in that. But I think that for me, that is where Italy has sort of let themselves down over the last few years, how they marketed themselves. The Premier League have done a fantastic job of doing that. And for me, they do not have the best football out of all the leagues, but they've done well in sort of marketing that we have these big clubs, we have these great players in our league. Even the average players have managed to sort of push them out to say, we have these great players within our league. And sort of that has benefited England, Germany and Spain in terms of gathering the TV rights money that has been flying around over the last few years. But I think last year was really the year I really paid attention to Serie A. I mean, I've sort of kept up with the results here and there in previous years, but last year just the competitiveness of the league is what drew me. And so yeah, I was watching it more or less weekly on BT Sport. I mean, there was a point where there was about 1 or 2 points between like the top 5 or 6 teams in Italy, and I thought, wow, this is exciting. This is the type of thing you need to sort of bring this league back to the forefront and say, you know what, we're back and this league is an exciting league to watch.
And on that,
So Juve getting to those Champions League finals wasn't the thing. It was more the competitiveness at the top, the excitement.
Because the reason why is because before then, Juve dominated the league. It wasn't competitive. And sometimes people switch off because they're like, well, we know the results. We know who's going to win. And so Juve going back to the Champions League sort of brought people back and made people aware that, okay, Italy's back through Juve. I think the competitiveness of last and even Roma doing what they did in Champions League, it made people aware that, okay, maybe there's more to Serie A than just Juve.
Yeah.
Maybe these other teams can sort of, you know, make things a bit more interesting for us.
Is the idea that I think was around for about a decade, Josh, about the Italian league being quite boring and very defensive, has that now become now a myth? Is the Italian league now a league that people that maybe stopped watching it a decade ago need to come back and start watching now, because it's not that league that it was, you know, it was about 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah, I think it's gone through a little bit of an evolution in terms of the football. And I definitely think from a branding point of view, Napoli in the last 2 to 3 seasons with Sarri definitely did a lot to help like the branding of Italian football. But I also think like Conte, the work that he started to do at Juve, and now Allegri's picked it up. You've got like Roma play really, really good attractive football as well. And there's a lot of money coming to the league. It's obviously, as with the Premier League as well, a lot of money came in. There's a lot of shady owners, so AC Milan went through a bit of a interesting time.
But, Mr. Lee. Sounds like a Bond villain.
But I think like the it's interesting. What one of the things that I kind of like piqued my attention was like apparently Inter Milan made a crazy wage offer to Modric. And he actually considered leaving Real Madrid to go to Inter Milan. I was like thinking, where did Inter Milan get all that money?
Where did that come from? Yeah.
Right. So like, it seems like there's a new era starting. The only kind of thing I concern I have is like, because I one thing that kind of made me interested, more interested, was like the competitiveness of the league when it came to last season's title race. And Juventus signing Ronaldo, I'm like, what's going to happen there? They're going to be a bit too good, and obviously, like, you know.
So in a way that the good, what Francesco said earlier on about him bringing him to the league is a good thing for the whole league, and that you've got this world star back in the league, could actually in a way backfire, because if he makes Juventus even better, it might turn people off, as Basil was saying, because they might win the league by another 10 points now.
Yeah, I don't think it will backfire, because I'm just saying, like, personally, I kind of look for,
okay.
Right? But you know, like Spain's been a two team league for a very long time. Didn't backfire, you know. Like if Juventus, especially if they win the Champions League with Ronaldo, that's going to be huge.
Yeah. Well, this is it. I think the Ronaldo purchase is purely a Champions League purchase. I mean, the Champions League is our nemesis. I don't know how to describe it, you know, the girl in the corner who you're just desperate to talk to and you just can't get the courage, because you just go towards her and then at the last minute you just walk by.
So Ronaldo is that shot of rum.
Ronaldo is the bottle of tequila, my friend. No salt, no lime, just no lemon. In. Him and Bonucci is the other one. You know, people forget that we've got him back.
Yeah, yeah.
Matey boy, just come back. You know, the tail between his legs. That didn't work out, did it, Leo? But, we're going all out for the Champions League. I mean, we've lost 7 finals. In my lifetime, well, in the time that I've supported Juve since I was 8, we've been in 6 finals and lost 5 of them. Wow. And that's the last 5.
Yeah.
And the first one that we won was 94-95 against Ajax on penalties. That's the first one that I saw, like, as an actual fan, not the 85 Heysel one, which I'd rather not talk about anyway. but it's all out Champions League. And that, and I totally take your point about the fact that Ronaldo might make it not as competitive, but I think we're going to be resting the team up to make sure that we're ready for Champions League.
Good for a point.
And everyone has strengthened. Yeah, I think maybe apart from Napoli.
I think one more thing to add to it. I think the reason why there was a sort of demise of the Serie A, some people like to say, is because I think AC Milan Inter Milan played a big part in that. In that they fell so hard in terms of quality that it switched people off, because obviously the main attraction in Italy was, let's say, Juventus, AC Milan and Inter Milan.
Worldwide, AC are the biggest team.
Yeah, and so what you found is that it sort of allowed teams to think, hold on, we're rubbing shoulders with this team. And so the fear factor sort of disappeared. And it reminded me of sort of like the admin guy sort of saying, I can speak to the director anyhow I wanted to. And that's how it felt. Because
all the analogies are coming out.
It's true, because by then it's like they were rotting in like 6th, 7th, 8th place for like 6, 7 years. And teams no longer respected them or revered them in the manner that they should have. It's sort of, let's say, Arsenal, Chelsea, Tottenham's sort of now going to the likes of Burnley and Southampton, and they're looking at them thinking, hold on, we're age mates now. You know,
that kind of is happening. It's
sort of that sort of forward, and then people think, hold on, what on earth is going on here?
And it's, I think, the old world and the new world.
Yeah.
What do you make of like Juventus, like, branding and the way they're marketing themselves?
Brilliant.
Because you said, that's a good question, because you just said that you think that the Ronaldo purchase was more for the Champions League, and that's going to obviously be a benefit regardless. I think it's actually more because they're trying to rebrand as this youth-friendly club that's, you know, has a very big online presence as well. I think that, because that will serve them for the next 10 years rather than the next 1 or 2, do you know what I mean, the Champions League.
It's both, but they go hand in hand, because one of the biggest things you can do for your brand is win the Champions League worldwide.
True,
you know,
true.
You're going to have kids in South America, in Africa, in Asia, who are going to have got to know football the year that Juve win the Champions League and want that kit and buy that kit because they don't necessarily have a you know,
sure.
You know, when you see pictures of when you go around, when you travel, you see Real kits, you see Barcelona kits, you even see Chelsea kits. Obviously, you know, there was the African connection because of Essien and Drogba and whatnot, and also Arsenal. But Juve, they knew that it was something they had to work on. And I remember noticing maybe 3-4 years ago how they were focusing on their social media. And at the beginning, the uptake, the views on YouTube, when YouTube was more the focus, were low. But you could see that the content quality was really high. And what they were trying to do, they were trying to push it and kept it consistent, kept the momentum going, and didn't give up. So that part of the strategy has been huge. Obviously, then you had the new logo come along, which obviously at the beginning everyone was like, ooh. But now everyone kind of accepts it, and I mean, I like it. It works.
I've come to like it too. I was a bit unsure at first, but I've come to like the logo.
And another element as well, we had a guy, this United fan, Greg, on about a month or two ago, and he was making this point, and he wasn't totally sure about it himself, but it made me think. He was noticing that a lot of the big European clubs, and he mentioned Juventus, are shortening their names for branding purposes as well. So no one says Bayern Munich anymore, it's Bayern. No one says Juventus anymore, it's Juve. You know what I mean? Chelsea's one word, Arsenal's one word, it's United. Is that a part of the branding process to try and make it just easier to write and to say and to... Do you think that's played a part in it as well?
I mean, I've never thought of it like that because I just call Juve.
Yeah.
We all call them that in, you know, Italian people do.
Sure.
It's rare that someone would say Juventus. But yeah, it will be internationally, of course. And also, it's being able to look something and instantly recognise it. That's what branding is all about, ultimately,
yeah, sure.
Isn't it? So it's seeing Juve and knowing exactly what that relates to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think what Juve has done has been really strong.
It seems to be working.
Insta, hashtags fino alla fine, which means till the end. That's our kind of motto.
Yeah.
The use of those hashtags, like myth, when we won the 7th, with using the 7 for the Y, and it's very, very...
It's a slick operation.
Some people don't like it at Juve. Some people think it's over the top. Enough with the hashtags, why don't we win the bloody Champions League? Which is a facile way of looking at it.
But as you say, they kind of go hand in hand.
Exactly.
Yeah, no. I want to talk a little bit about what I'm asking, is Serie A back and Serie B and Serie C? There's some clubs that are going bust and it's not looking good in some of the clubs below Serie A. But I want to just skim through some of the teams that are going to be scrapping it, I assume, for second in Italian league. Josh, Inter. Mm-hmm. Let's start with them. They seem to have had a good, a decent transfer window. Some names here they've brought in: Nangolan, Balde, Asamoah, De Vrij. You mentioned they tried to get Modric, and probably most importantly of all, they've kept Icardi as well. They managed to kind of keep Icardi there too.
Yeah.
And they've also got this other young guy that someone's telling me about,
Martinez.
Yes, yeah. And everyone's saying to me that he's the guy that could be the ting.
Yeah.
What do you think are their chances? Where are they in the pecking order for finishing second?
My kind of thinking was Napoli, but then I sort of thought, well, you know, they've lost Sarri and Ancelotti's first season. How's it going to go?
And Jorginho's gone.
But they replace him. Fabian Ruiz, good player. But I think Inter, I'm looking at them. Spalletti's a really good manager. Nangolan, I think, is a really good player if they can get him going. Icardi's brilliant. They kept Perisic.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've got probably a really, really good back four. In terms of, like, they've got De Vrij, and then they've got Miranda and Skriniar.
Yeah, Skriniar. Mm-hmm.
Skriniar is probably after Koulibaly, I would say probably the best centre back in the league.
Giorgio Chiellini.
I think Koulibaly is, but I agree.
Koulibaly is immense.
Yeah. Yeah. But and they got Handanović and Chingar. I think they're solid. I think they're a solid team. I thought they would do well last season, but I just don't know what happened.
Is this their best squad, Basil, since the treble winning team?
Squad, yes, I think the team had that sort of team over them to sort of win the treble. And it was, as Francesco was saying earlier, is that brotherhood they had that sort of allowed them to elevate winning that treble season, which was brought on by Mourinho, that, you know, you fight for me, I fight for you, and if we fight together, we're going to win these titles. But I think as a squad, this squad is better. I think they need time to gel, which is even the weekend where they lost 1-0. But I think once... everyone starts clicking together, I think we can see a fantastic Inter team. And I was very happy that on the last day of last season, they sort of pipped Lazio to that final Champions League
spot. What a game that was.
This year.
Wow.
Because it was a great game. And honestly, I would love to see Inter Milan in Champions League and see what they can do in the Champions League with the array of talent that they have within that squad.
I'll stick with you, Basil. It's gone to Napoli now. They've put in Ancelotti, as we mentioned. How much will their biggest job be trying to undo, to try and get Ancelotti's team? Because it was a very, very specific way of playing that took a while to get them going. Does he have to spend time now almost unpicking that to make it an Ancelotti team? Would that be the biggest cause they have?
I don't think so. I think with Napoli, especially with Sarri, I don't think they really developed a sort of killer, ruthless winning mentality in key games in the season. Mm-hmm. I think for Napoli, it's more of a mentality thing. When I watched them last season, they played all the great football at times, but I think there's key moments in key games where they sort of switched off and allowed teams to score goals. There was a lot of sloppy goals they conceded, a few goals that came from set pieces, which I was a bit worried about watching Napoli. And I think with Ancelotti, with the winning mentality he sort of developed over the years, he can sort of help them go over that line and maybe win something, because I think for them it's more about breeding that winning mentality within the team. And I think if Ancelotti gets that right, we could see something special from Napoli this season, but it will take time.
Francesco, let's go on to Roma. They've done some business as well, some good business, in Zonzi, Pastore, Kluivert, Schick, and they've replaced Alisson with Ospina. So just undone all that good work. What do you think about their prospects of coming second?
I actually like their transfer window more than most, because of just the fact that they managed to attract those players. I think that I saw as a big positive for Serie A. You know, in Zonzi played a World Cup final. Mm-hmm. I think we underestimate him here, maybe because he played for Blackburn, was it?
Yeah, and Stoke.
But you know, he's top. He's top notch.
He is.
Pastore coming back, like you said. Kluivert coming in, who made a difference on the weekend.
The front three. I've forgotten who the third one is. They got Schick, Kluivert.
Under.
Is it him?
Yeah, Cengiz Under.
Yeah. That's a young front three that could be a problem.
Schick. I mean, yeah. Juve bought Schick, but then we found some sort of an issue with his heart, and then the deal fell through, and I was gutted because that guy has got skill. Obviously he struggled a bit last season, but you know, they're building a really interesting young team there. And Di Francesco, I'm hoping he'll learn from his terrible attempt to beat Liverpool, because he got the rest of the season more or less right. But in those games, I mean, shocking. What kind of a high line are you playing?
Shocking.
I mean, I was just had my head in my hands, because I know there's a big debate here about whether if you support Man U you should support Liverpool in Europe. Like, I like to see the Italian teams doing well. Maybe it's because I live here and I'm sort of Italian origin. My dad's Italian, so I'm not there, so I'm not as, you know, I don't hate Torino, for example. But yeah, I was gutted about that. But no, they should have a good season. They last minute winner from Dzeko. Listeners should check it out. It was quite a goal set up by Justin Kluivert.
I saw, and that was a sick goal. Josh, we want to my outside tip for second.
Who?
I'm going with Milan. Now, they've got Maldini back in there as sporting director, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Kaká is rumoured to be back in an interning role on the board.
Making the coffee.
Well, I don't know. they weren't specified what the role is. They just said, you know, it's going to be an intern type role. So I was like, well, I don't know. I'm trying to get the band back together again. They've brought in the most prolific striker in the last 5 years in Serie A, in Higuain.
Yeah. Gutted about that.
Caldara, who's one of the hottest young defenders
also
in Italy.
Gutted about that.
Yeah. They've got they've got Bakayoko as well, so that's
undoes all the good work they've
done. And I heard, we were talking just before we came on air about Savage, but I hear that Milan are the favourites to get in like a bit of an instalment deal.
I'm not having any of that. They made some good transfers. Laxo is right left back. I think it's an excellent signing.
Yes.
I was so pissed off that we didn't go for him at United, because I think he's quality. He had a good World Cup as well. I just think that having a conversation actually with someone yesterday, and I was they were telling me, and I kind of agree with this, that
Higuain is a bigger signing for AC Milan than Ronaldo is for Juventus in terms of ups, in terms of improving the quality.
Sure.
Because Higuain is replacing Andre Silva and Kalinic, and they were shocking last season. Like, absolutely shocking. So that's a brilliant signing. But the main problem with AC Milan is Gattuso for me. I'm not having him. I'm not having him. I don't think he's a good manager. I think he's got the team working really hard. I just don't think he's quite there yet. Maybe he's going to improve.
Okay.
And develop his kind of tactical acumen, but I haven't seen that much from him. I mean, when he played Arsenal in the Europa League.
I mean, even we beat them. Quite convincingly as well. We were terrible. Shocking at the time.
He gives a portrayal of lack of passion, Merchant. That's what he...
But I think... Not AC Milan. I think Lazio. I give Lazio an outside shot. I think they're a quality team. I think if they keep Milinkovic-Savic as well, that kind of forward line, Luis Alberto, Milinkovic-Savic, and then Ciro Immobile. They lost Felipe Anderson, but I think De Vrij will be a miss.
I was more impressed with Luis Alberto.
He's quality.
Because I've always liked him, especially when he was at Barcelona B. I thought he was a talented player when I saw him.
Wasn't he at Liverpool?
Came to Liverpool. Briefly. It never worked out there. I don't know what happened there. But last season, they managed to get a lot out of him. And he looked a very talented player. I think he got something like 12 assists last season. And he looked fantastic for them.
I'll leave the last word to you, Francesco. I mean, obviously, you guys had a summer off this year for obvious reasons. hence all the great business you've done in the summer with the clubs.
Our under-20s got to the Euro final. Hey, did you see that? Moise Keane with two goals. That was a mental game. Against, the Portuguese. Ended 4-3 in extra time. Mm-hmm. Mental. But
just
anyway.
two quick questions. Is Serie A an attractive league now for also young hot talent? Do you think it's a league that if you're German, even English or Spanish, and you're young, it's a league now that might appeal to a hot up-and-coming 18, 19-year-old? And secondly, what's happening with the national team itself, and where do you see that? We've got the Euros in 2 years. Is it revolution or is it evolution?
I think... I don't see why it wouldn't be attractive to young players from all over Europe, but in Italy, the focus now is on bringing through up, which, you know, we desperately need.
Yeah.
So, you know, teams like Atalanta who are key to that. I mean, the amount of players they've got flowing around on loan around all the leagues. Juve as well.
Why do they produce so much talent that I've interested?
It's just they've got an excellent academy.
Okay.
It's like one of those things like Ajax, obviously not as good as Ajax is.
Yeah, yeah.
But Atalanta's, they're just well known for producing a lot of players. And Juve have been following a similar tact. In getting a lot of young players, getting them out on loan, like a bit like what Chelsea do, but I don't think we're looking to do it just purely to make money. You know, we want some homegrown talent in there. We just lost Marchisio, unfortunately. You know, he's decided to rescind his contract. It's whether these players can find space at these clubs, and the facilities, I think, are also a bit of an issue. I think Juve is an attractive proposition because we've invested in those facilities. But a lot of the other clubs have to catch up there.
Okay.
And a national team.
Yeah, go on. Sorry, I was going to say, is the Euros slightly too early? Are you looking now at the next World Cup?
In terms of actually winning a tournament?
No. To have a team that can genuinely compete.
Look, I think that if Italy had qualified for this World Cup, we would have competed. Like I say, Italy, the Italian national team is an odd thing.
You find a way.
Yeah, we find a way. Even with, look at how did Conte manage to get to the quarter final of the last Euro, and we lost to the Germans on penalties, despite having the poorest team we've had in forever.
Yeah,
we beat the Belgians, we beat the Spanish, we made them look ordinary with our most ordinary team. So it's win or bust. Either we are shocking or we're amazing. This time we were more shocking than we've ever been because we've
And just very before another question, just very briefly, managers. Are there a generation of Italian managers coming through? Because at the top level, I can only really think of Ancelotti, Conte and Allegri. Am I forgetting any other obvious Italian?
Sarri.
He's not won anything. So.
Di Francesco, Ranieri.
What about Inzaghi as well at Lazio as well?
Inzaghi.
Is there a wave of new coaches and Italian managers?
He's been touted as the next Juve manager. Inzaghi, his brother is at Bologna. Yeah. Filippo is at Bologna.
Yeah.
I think we will never, ever have a problem with managers. That's the one thing that I was thinking about this the other day, actually. I was just thinking, at least that's something we'll never have to worry about, like the English team does. We have managers for days.
Okay.
Capello still hasn't managed Italy. No, I don't know if we actually want to figure a bad thing. But still, the only reason I think as well, just quick point, that I don't think Ancelotti took the job. He's waiting for that crop of players. Ancelotti will come. Ancelotti will be he's that tournament guy.
Sure. In one word, guy, we'll finish second in Serie A this year, Basil.
If you say Juve, we're not friends anymore.
I'm going to go Roma.
Roma, let's Josh? Roma.
Inter.
Ooh.
Roma
as well. Okay, yeah, I'm sticking with Milan, but it's a long shot.
AC Milan.
Yeah, it's a long shot. I accept, but hey ho. Right. Okay, so let's talk about Crystal Palace now, guys. And to do so, I want to bring in Terence from the Red and Blue Army. Terence, how you doing, mate?
Very good, thank you. How are you, Jordan?
I'm good, mate. I'm very well, thank you. Cheers for coming on the pod. So I must let our listeners know that we're recording this just before the Palace-Liverpool game. So most people will get this after the game. So we're talking about this in the context that this is before the Palace game and hopefully before Palace beats Liverpool as well. let's start off, Terence, with Zaha. He announced that he signed an extension to his deal to keep him at Palace for the next 5 or 6 years, I believe. And
5 years.
5-year deal. And there's been some kind of like some differing of interpretations of what that really says about Zaha. So now, I'm sure as Palace fans, you guys believe that, you know, it's great for him, great for the club, one of our own, South London boy, you know, he's where he belongs. But a lot of other people have been saying that it shows lack of ambition and it suggests that maybe he has doubts about whether he could cut it at the top level. How did you read his signing of a contract?
Well, for us, like, we don't give a damn what other people think, whether it's a lack of ambition or whatever, you know. What's wrong with wanting to stay where you're from, your local team, and having an affinity to all of the people in your area? And like you said, when you signed the contract, I'm all Crystal Palace. And, you know, he can go and sign for a big club. Of course, we know that Chelsea were obviously very interested in the transfer window, and he can go and sign that contract. But then he goes there, either hits the ground running, whatever, or doesn't, and then can get called a mercenary or just come in for the money. And either way, for players like Wilfried Zaha, who the press are never that kind to, it's going to get twisted against him whichever way he does it. So for us, as Crystal Palace fans, obviously we're delighted. And, you know, there needs to be a little bit more loyalty in football. So good for him, and hopefully more people will follow suit in the future.
And I'm a South London boy myself, Terence, and I grew up not far from Selhurst Park. But explain to our listeners what Zaha represents to the Crystal Palace fans.
Well, he is, in a nutshell, the epitome of the South London area and Crystal Palace. You know, he represents the diversity that is in and around the Croydon area. He comes from a very, very big family. He comes from playing football on the streets in South London. And that's what we're all, you know, that's what we all love. We love our own, like, nurturing him throughout our youth team system. He came all the way up. Obviously, there was the little blip when he went to Manchester United, but we weren't sure that we were definitely getting promoted to the Premier League at that point. It was in the January before we got promoted, and £15 million was a lot of money to a club that, you know, hadn't been in the Premier League for 8 years. So we had to we couldn't take the gamble that we were going to go up, so we had to cash in on the money as we could then. Obviously, he ended up coming back, and now, you know, you see the picture of him when he signed a new contract standing next to the big mural that said South London and Proud, and that's what it means.
Zaha, Terence, I see someone that looks like a player that is still very, very raw, but yet very still professional. And what I mean by that is he still has that element of street football about him. He still has that. When I watch him play, there's people like him, Dele Alli, maybe Ross Barkley, years gone by, Wayne Rooney, that they play football like they played football when they was at school or on the streets. And they've not come through maybe the kind of traditional routes of academies where that's coached out of them. And when I watch him play, I see someone that reminds me of players that were just before the decade of, you know, English talented players getting really polished and having that kind of instinctive vibe about them taken out of them. Would that be a fair assessment of how he plays and who and the kind of player he is?
Yeah, 100%. You've hit the nail on the head. When he went off to Manchester United for that short space of time, when he came back, he was already a very different player to the one that left. The one that left was, he sees a fullback, he's running at him, he's taking him on. And obviously back then, he took him on one too many times often. But you obviously learn to when to release the ball as you get older. But yeah, he came back from Manchester United and he would never stand centre or fullbacks up. He'd always just be squaring the ball inside, very conscious about keeping possession. And we were all very like, what's happened to Wilfried Zaha? This is insane. But then, obviously, over the years at Palace now, he's just been told, no, this is your strength, this is what you do, you run at players and you beat them. And over the last 18 months, he's matured so much in his end product and he started to add assists and goals, which was always used to criticise his play, saying, yep, you can beat any fullback in the world, but his crosses at the end of it are useless or his shots. But now that the goals and the assists are coming, people are really standing up and taking notes.
No, brilliant. I think it's also important to note as well that I've read that he's donating 10% of his wages to charity as well. So, he's not probably the first guy to do that and won't be the last, but I think it's worth mentioning that that's what's been reported. And if that is the case, good on him.
It's been the case since his very first professional paycheck.
Oh, really?
He's donated 10%, yeah.
Okay, well, good on him for that. Manchester City smashed Huddersfield 6-1 yesterday. It's 2 wins from 2 from them. They're looking like they're not going to give up their crown without a fight. What kind of Liverpool team are you expecting tonight, considering they know they have to win tonight? And I know they've beaten you a few times and lost to you a few times in the last few years, but I've got a few friends that think that Palace away is the sort of game that Liverpool will define their season, only because it's the sort of game they can easily drop points. If they're going to catch Manchester City or at least keep up with them, they have to beat you tonight. What kind of Liverpool team are you expecting tonight?
Well, it's going to be a Liverpool, whatever Liverpool team turns up, they can't expect what they got against West Ham on the opening weekend. You know, West Ham played a suicidal high line and was very disorganised. It was almost as if they were missing a central defensive midfielder, as in Cheick Chiarte, who's come across to South London. But at Crystal Palace, we're going to be sitting in a much deeper line. We're going to be much more compact. We play it's a very, very fluid formation that we play at the moment. So they're going to have to break through two very strong lines of very, very defensive-minded players. And then we'll look for our opportunities to hit on the counter, and it will be quick into Benteke, and then Jeffrey Schluck, Wilfried Zaha, Patrick Van Aanholt, Aaron Wan-Bissaka. These guys are all running sub 1300 metres. Andros Townsend, you know, these people are fast. So we're going to sit and draw Liverpool out, and I expect them to come on to us because, like you say, the onus is on them because they want to be challenging for the title. This is the kind of game that they see they need to come and try and win. But I'm either going to sound like a genius now or a lunatic, considering it's before the game. But I think we're going to surprise a lot of people this season, a lot of teams. And this isn't by any means going to be an easy game. And I think barring we don't have an injury crisis like last season, we're going to be a tough game for a lot of teams.
Well, I was going to ask you, Terence. Sorry, what is a good season for Palace this year?
Well, I mean, stability. First and foremost, no injury crisis, no manager leaving halfway through the season, no losing 7 games in a row. I think for us this year, anywhere sort of 11th upwards, how high we can go, I don't know, maybe as high as 7th, but that's the thing with the rest of the table. You never know. Look at Burnley last season with a team that took that place. So I think 7th to 11th is kind of our range this season.
Listen, Terence, you're the man. Where can people find your website and your socials?
Well, you can head to redandbluearmy.co.uk. That's the blog. And at Twitter, it's redandbluearmy1.
Terence, thanks for your time, mate. Good luck tonight.
No worries, Jordan. Thank you very much.
Cheers, mate. Take care, pal. So thank you very much to Terence there from Red and Blue Army. Guys, Crystal Palace now. Let's talk a little bit about them. You know, we've not had a... any kind of Palace chat on the pod this season so far. Zaha signed his contract, an extension to his contract just last week. It's a 5-year deal. Josh, what do you think Zaha committing probably the next 5 years of the next best 5 years of his career to Palace says about him? Does it say that he's happy and he's comfortable, or does it say that he doesn't really fancy himself testing himself at the biggest clubs?
Do you know what? It's always one of these. I saw a tweet yesterday, I think, and somebody said something like Wilfried Zaha signing his contract for Palace, and they basically called him a bottler. And like the reverse of that is like when he left Crystal Palace at a very young age to go to Man United, they called him a money chaser.
Mm.
Right. So I think it's like whatever you do, someone's gonna have something negative to say. Mm. I think he's playing really well. And he likes the manager he's playing under, and he's developing his game. I think he probably could play for a better team, but maybe he's waiting for a big club to come in for him. I think there was rumors about Chelsea that maybe if they went in for him, he would have went there. Mm. But if I was him, I wouldn't leave Palace to go and play for like Leicester or something. Like, mm. You might as well wait for a big one.
Yeah. Basil, there's rumors going around that he's agreed with Palace that basically I'll sign this deal, but I'm going, let me go next year so you get the maximum amount of money. There's no release clause in this contract I was hearing. So no. you get a big fee, I get a big move, everybody wins. How much of that do you think is possibly true? Or do you believe that he's just happy there? And he's just like, I'm happy here, why would I leave?
I think there's a combination that he's happy. I don't think he has an agreement with Palace. I think it's more safety net. No one has really come in for him. And so they've offered him improved terms. And as a footballer, you take the improved terms until a serious club comes in with a serious offer. So as Joshua said, I think he's biding his time for the right club to come in for him. It's one of those weird ones because I don't buy the same talk about Zaha as everyone else. I don't think he's that good to play for a top 4 or 5 club, mm-hmm. only because of his output. Mm-hmm. I think he's a fantastic player, a great dribbler, but I think his end product still isn't there. And I was watching highlights on Sky Sports, I think they were showing it yesterday, and I was looking at the goals they were showing. I was like, you're showing me goals from a period of like 5-6 years. Mm. Whereas most people, you're showing me a highlight reel about a player.
1 or 2 seasons.
Yeah, 1 or 2 seasons. And that for me is a problem. In fact, if you're having to sort of cascade a whole load of goals over a number of 5-6 years, it shows you something about his end product. And I think that is what has always let him down over the last few seasons. And I think that's the reason why clubs are a bit on the fence about putting in a bid for him. Mm. I think they're probably thinking, is he really going to take us over the line with the amount of skills that is required for us to sort of win big games and sort of win trophies in the end?
Francesco, does he improve any team in the top 6 as 11?
I don't think so, but it's more because I think that he's able to get the best out of himself at Palace. He's near home. He's comfortable in his surroundings. He has fans that love him. He has a manager that gets him. He's got players around him who play for him. He's talismanic. And that's why I think that, one, he should stay, and two, that he may not be able to recreate that, as was the problem in Manchester. I think he's definitely a maturer character now than he was then. So that's not to say that he couldn't try to make that jump. But, you know, I think the reason that everyone's looking at him now, because it's when he came back that it all turned around for Palace, didn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, he really helped drag that team. But I don't know. I think there's a lot to be said for just being happy. I know that's kind of hippy-dippy, but, you know, if he's happy there and he's playing great football and there's a project there at Crystal Palace, mm. it's not like they're just going to stay still. They're looking to expand, new stadium. There's a lot of money in Croydon, a lot right now. With all the development down there, there's going to be music venues there in the next few. There's a lot happening, and he could be at the forefront of that. And Palace could be a team that can qualify to the Europa League. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
They've already managed to attract, you know, players above where you would think they would be able to, like a Kabay and people like that. People were surprised when it happened. And I think Hodgson gets it. He cares about it because it's his neck of the woods too.
Sorry, just to kind of go back on your point there about them getting some quite biggish names there. That concerns me though, because Kabay didn't do very well there, Benteke is not doing very well.
I thought Kabay's been all right.
He was on a massive contract, and they didn't get value for money from him at all. In that
value
4 years.
For money is a different thing. and
Benteke, you know, went there, was a world star, but he went there as like again on a big contract with big expectations. He's not done well. Max Meiler's gone there now as well, and I just I'm worried that they're getting these name-ish brand players that are kind of like see Palace as either a payday or they're going there for a reason. Are they going to Palace because no one else? That's am I being harsh? Maybe I'm being harsh there.
I think partly realistic. I think, you know, yes, there are clubs that are stepping stones. Listen, I think every club in the world is a stepping stone apart from Real Madrid and Barcelona, really, aren't they? But I think Palace have made some mistakes. Koeman being De Boer being the main one, where they tried to just change what they were doing overnight. But I think this project, sometimes you need to, you know, go down that dead end to eventually take the right path. And look, you know, the team's coming up on the screen.
Yeah, we're just watching that game as we're recording.
And, you know, Milivojevic, he's one that had an excellent season last season.
Decent player.
It could really click. If they carry on the momentum from last season, I think, you know, they could be pushing for Europa.
What's a good season, finally, Josh, for Palace this year? Are they in that, if they stay up, it's a good season camp?
Mid-table. They're a mid-table team.
Like
12th, 11th, 10th. Like, they've got Benteke still up front. Well, what's he going to do?
Find his form. Who knows?
Score 30 goals.
Is that a problem that, you know, Zaha seems to be the only real goal threat? And
Townsend can score a goal
just
or two.
Townsend
and Millie as well.
Maybe Max Meyer can help out a little bit. I don't know in it. But on going back to Zaha, the whole Man United thing, right? Like, he didn't fail. He didn't get given a chance. He didn't fail.
I agree with you there.
He didn't fail. I think that if it was, well, I can only speak if it was me, I get the feeling he's probably thinking, like, I want another shot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not, because it's got to burn him. Like, he went to Man United. Mm. He didn't, like, you know, the manager left.
Yeah.
A new manager came in. Manager wasn't having him. Didn't play him.
Yeah, yeah.
Then he went back to Palace. And I think he made, out of, like, all of the the young players that moved to big clubs, I think he made the smartest choice, which is to go back.
Yeah.
And he went back very, very quickly. You get a lot of players that were sitting at City, their career just petered out, and he's gone back and he's rebuilt his career.
He's given himself another chance of getting a big move. Yeah.
I think he'll be looking at it thinking, yeah, I fancy it. Because I'm looking at some of the teams and I don't think he's going to be one of the best wingers in the league and like win you the league, but like I'm having him over Pedro, I'm having him over some players. Like I think he could do a good job. I think he's also probably one of the best players at beating players in the league.
I think he's the best.
Really?
Apart from Eden Hazard, I think he's probably second best.
Zaha can beat a man like easily
with ease. Yeah.
One of the things I spoke to Terence there from Red and White, Red and Blue Army was that he seems to have that element of rawness still about him, that kind of street football in him. It's not been over-academised. It's not been overly coached out of him. He still has that kind of element that I mentioned, Ali and maybe Rooney, if he's got there. They have that give him a ball and he doesn't seem like he's been overcoached.
I would have liked to see him at Spurs.
Do you think he gets in their 11?
I think he could. I don't know. Lucas Moura is a good player, but I don't think he's going to be that much better than him. Or for instance, they had Lamela. They play around with Son. I think he's in that group of players. Like Son, I think is a quality player, but I think he could, if he got the chance at Spurs, I think he could have made an impact.
I think just like what Josh said, I think Spurs for him was his next stepping stone. You know, players, I think before players reach a big club, they saw Spurs is that kind of club where you go.
Is that
to
a slice shot as well? Because I was with you until I read that one a minute. Like.
No, but I think Spurs is that kind of club. You go there to sort of build a name for yourself before you take that next step to a bigger club. And I felt like Spurs is the kind of club for him, especially with the way Pochettino sort of embeds like youthful players or new players into the team. And I think Pochettino probably would have put an arm around him and said, you know what, I can make you a better player, and would have given him opportunities in that team over time.
Okay.
I'd even go as far to say, even though Mourinho is the manager, so he'll probably ruin him, but United, who plays right wing for United? I'd have Zaha over any of them.
Rashford right and now. Sanchez, I think.
Rashford's not a winger, right? And Martial ain't either, really. So it's Mata.
I'm having Zaha. I'll tell you that.
Fair point. Quick update on our fantasy football league, guys. Tom Robinson is currently top with 76 points after game week 2. He's got 76 points this week, and he's still got Salah and Firmino to play tonight. So he could be easily topping 100 points. I'm on 69 points. I've still got Salah, Robertson and Van Dijk to play tonight. Josh, you are 58 points currently, but you're 30th. So up your game, bro. And Basil doesn't want to laugh because you're 55th. You're actually 55th. Like,
I don't know where to bring up my team.
55th. Like, really?
Yeah, man. Sahar let me down. Salah let me down last week, man.
Oh, man.
Mane Mane get the goals.
You guys are... Come on, man. 55th, like... Really? Cool. So, yeah, up your game, guys. I wasn't going to talk about Arsenal this week on the pod because I don't think it made sense until... we had something to kind of learn something from. But in the back of my mind, I'm hearing some of our regulars, Akin and Ollie and Marvin, you never talk about Arsenal when they lose. I'd rather wait until we can judge them on something that actually we can learn something from. Has anyone got anything particularly they want to talk about in Arsenal?
What's your thoughts on that?
Thoughts are we've lost two games to two top teams, and I think we've got a new manager and it's going to get worse before it gets better. There's nothing that I've learned from our two games, so I don't really have anything... And to be fair, I wouldn't have talked about them if we'd have beaten Chelsea or City, and that's me being honest. But that's always the Arsenal guy here. Is anything you want to talk about?
As an Arsenal fan, we are in trouble.
I was trying to move on there, but like
we are in actual trouble. And I said it time and time again. Our summer signings for me were signings of deceit.
Really?
Yeah, honestly, because I've always said this: the board never looked at quality; they just looked at numbers to look as though we were being active. I think Guendouzi is a decent player. I think he looks like he has something about him. Socrates, for me, has always been a dreadful defender. I've watched German football. Jeez. I have no idea why we signed him in the first place. Who's that other sign? Torreira looks good. He needs time. Manager has said he's not match fit yet, but he looks good from the little I've seen. Liechtenstein, I've liked him as a player. I'm not too sure how much he still has left at 35.
No, probably not too much, but... He'll teach a bit of guile.
He's a general, yeah.
Exactly. But when you look at it as a whole, our starting lineup hasn't really changed.
No.
And so for
It has, it's just not really improved.
Really improved. And so I look at it and I was like, it's still the same old players. I think offensively we've got worse over the years, and it's got to the stage where we're now starting to see that. Defensively, we looked absolutely dreadful against Chelsea. Playing out from the back, it doesn't work, because our midfielders do not give the defenders an option to pass the ball to. Mm-hmm. So Cech plays it to one of the defenders and they look absolutely confused on the ball as to what to do next. And so I sit there and I think to myself, what on earth are you working on in the training ground if you're trying to play out from the back? Because they look lost on the pitch.
But that is not going to happen. That's not going to be good after
a
pre-season.
Look at Chelsea. Sarri came in much later than our manager, and look at the way they're popping the ball around.
Well, they've got better quality of player
than
Arsenal.
But you can see the difference between the way they're moving the ball around now.
I'm not sure you
under
can, though. Huddersfield are crap, as we're seeing, so forget that game.
But even Arsenal, look at the way they're moving the ball around quicker. Even from the back, they moved around much quicker than we did.
Do you know what, yeah? Like, they've got David Luiz playing centre-back. They've got a keeper who is like very, very good at playing that from the back, Kepa.
Yeah.
Like he's good at that.
Some of the balls those players fantastic.
Like they've got, and even under Conte a little bit, like he wasn't the play out from the back type of manager, but they did it when they needed to. Like I think they're more accustomed to doing it than
agreed.
We're further behind than them, so yeah. I wouldn't even compare it to them.
But here's the thing: we did the same too under Wenger. I'm not saying we did it as frequently, but we knew how to. If we had the ball at the back, we knew how to maneuver ourselves out of danger. We look worse now doing that.
Well, yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's not as if we haven't been accustomed to doing it. We have, but we look worse.
I think you just gotta give it time.
I'm ready to give the manager time, but I'm a bit worried by what I've seen in the first two games. If I'm being honest,
how do Mustafi and Xhaka still get a game? That's what I'm confused. As an objective, an outsider looking in, I think one, Emery needs time, and I think he'll get better
definitely.
But I don't get why those two play, I don't know why Leno hasn't been put in goal.
The Leno thing's interesting for me because I'm not a massive fan of him personally. I think he's a good goalkeeper from what I've seen. I don't think he's an elite great keeper.
No, but George, did you see the tweet that Gladbach tweeted?
I know.
No, but what, the reason why I'm saying that is that here's the confusing thing. Yeah. I would agree with Basil on, right? You're trying to play out from the back. Czech's not the guy.
No.
And you've got a keeper on the bench
that does that.
Who knows how to do it. Yeah. So what are you doing?
Yeah.
It's almost to prove a point. Crazy.
I don't understand it.
Yeah, no, I think maybe he's just maybe trying to phase him in. I don't know. It is a weird one. But
and two quick positives to end on it. I think one thing I like from Emery is that he's not afraid of change. The fact he took Shaka off at half time was a positive. The fact Ozil was playing so bad and he decided to hook him off after like 66 minutes or whatever it was, I think that was a positive, because under Arsene, he would have waited until the 79th minute to make a sub. Ozil would have played that whole 90 minutes and then started the next game. Mm. So for me, I'm not too sure if Ozil even starts against West Ham, if I'm being honest.
No, I don't think the West Ham game is going to be as... I don't think it's a definite Arsenal win in the way that I think a lot of Arsenal fans think it's going to be.
No.
I think that game is going to be harder than many think. All right, so let's continue our slightly continental, international feel to this week's Football Fans Pod by bringing in our regular Spanish football expert, Ben Hayward. Ben, how you doing, man?
I'm good, Jordan. Thanks, and you?
I'm well, mate. I'm very well. Thank you very much. First of all, congratulations on your new post are you the foreign or just a Spanish correspondent for the Evening Standard now?
Yeah, that's right. Spanish football correspondent.
Brilliant.
For the Evening Standard. Yeah, brilliant. Thanks very much.
Well, yes, well done, mate. Well deserved as well. Let's kick off by talking about the news that broke last week, Ben, that there's going to be a La Liga game played in the MLS, America. It's going to be exporting that to the States and playing a game as part of a franchise out there. The game is rumoured to be Betis v Barcelona. I want to know, how has this gone down amongst Spanish fans generally? And also, what are the positives, if any, that there are for this new move? Because all I'm hearing is negatives. Are there any for you positives for this new move?
It's a difficult one, Jordan. I haven't heard of any positives yet from a Spanish point of view. You know, I guess you could argue that in the long term, you know, this is going to help La Liga to expand. It's going to bring in more money. It's going to be more exposure. And, you know, potentially, if you're a fan of a club like Betis, then, you know, maybe in future they would have more money to bring in more expensive signings, that kind of thing. But I think that would be the long term vision. Certainly, at the moment, I haven't heard many positives over here. And, you know, I'm very, very surprised that La Liga went ahead and announced this decision, seemingly without consulting clubs, you know, over the idea, the proposal in the first place. The Association of Spanish Footballers has come out and said that they're against the decision. You know, even Barcelona boss Ernesto Valverde said that he was surprised by the idea and made it very clear that he didn't like it either. So, you know, La Liga says that they've really consulted the clubs. It'd be interested to see who they spoke to, because everybody, it seems, was in the dark. And, you know, you mentioned the negatives, lots of them. You know, if it is Barcelona Betis, or should we say Betis Barcelona, because it would be the Betis home fixture that would be the one played out in the States. You know, Betis are a team that came sixth last season in La Liga. But, you know, in recent years, they've had some decent results at home to Barcelona. Now, if you make that fixture a neutral one in the United States, where Barcelona have, as we saw in preseason, you know, numerous fans, you know, Barcelona dominated in terms of the fan base in all of their preseason fixtures out in the States. And so that's not a level playing field. You know, it gives it makes a fixture that Betis would have a chance to be competitive in, if it's a home game, very, very difficult if it's played in a neutral venue. And so that's not fair competition. You know, if they were to, you know, it's probably not going to happen, but if they were to go on and be relegated, say, at the end of the season, and they went down by a single point, you know, you could look back at that fixture and say, well, you know, that wasn't fair.
Yeah.
So I can understand why the clubs are against it. It's also it also means a lot of traveling. You know, in the middle of a hectic season already, you're asking a team to make a long journey out to the States. That's not ideal for fitness, and, you know, it could cause injuries. There's all sorts of concerns, to be honest.
Let's move on to the league now, Ben. I've got good money. No, not at all. I've got good faith on Atletico winning this year's La Liga title. the team looks really strong. The manager, obviously, we know about Simeone there. But I was thinking of reasons why that might be a crazy kind of prediction. I couldn't really think of many, apart from the fact that there's a guy called Lionel Messi at Barcelona. Is he the single biggest reason, maybe the only reason, why Atletico Madrid aren't favourites for this title?
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Jordan, and Atletico. I think are going to be really strong this year. And we saw them last season. Last season, they had to adapt to playing in a new stadium, of course. They had a transfer ban for the first half of the season, which meant they weren't able to field any new players until January. But when they did that, Diego Costa in particular was really, really impressive alongside Griezmann. Griezmann has stayed at the club. They've signed really well. They've got used to playing at the Wanda Metropolitano. I agree with you that they'll be very, very strong this season. But yeah, you know, Barcelona have won La Liga 7 times in the last 10 years. That's not all down to Messi, but a lot of it is. And we saw it again on Saturday night. You know, he was instrumental in that victory over Alaves, which they were proving a really tough nut to crack. And, you know, he produced a moment of magic with that free kick underneath the wall. And then they went on to win comfortably after that. And, you know, so many times, haven't we? We've seen that over the years. And, you know, when Atletico played at Camp Nou last season, Barcelona beat them 1-0. And Simeone said after the game, you know, if Messi had been on our side, we would have won the game. And, you know, it's difficult to argue. Yeah. He just makes the difference. So I think that's why Barcelona are favourites. But I expect, as you say, Atletico to run them close this season.
Is there a concern about the other team in Madrid? I mean, they've obviously lost Ronaldo, and there's still no shabby squad that they've got there at Real Madrid. But is there a concern, though, that they could not only finish third out of those three teams, but third by a little bit of a distance?
I think there is a concern, obviously. I mean, you know, Zidane left, Ronaldo left, Ronaldo hasn't been replaced. Still don't have a proper backup striker to Karim Benzema. They finished third in La Liga last season as well, and they finished third because they got off to a slow start and they couldn't win games. They had a problem scoring goals in the first half of the championship. Ronaldo wasn't scoring, Benzema as well. So that concern is still there. You look at the fact that there's no backup to Benzema and no Ronaldo replacement. You think, where are the goals going to come from? And on top of that, of course, they have to get used to a new coach now. And a new playing style. And I thought there were some positive signs in the win over Getafe last night, but it's not going to be overnight. It's going to take a little bit of time for the players to adjust to Lopetegui and his methods, and you know, very different to Zidane's. And, you know, there's not much margin for error. We've seen teams in La Liga racking up 90, 95, even 100 points in recent seasons. And, you know, if you get off to a bad start, sometimes it can be too late. And that's exactly what happened to Real Madrid last season. So that's definitely going to be the concern this time around.
Okay, and just finally, Ben, is there this year, the big three aside, is there a team or a player that, you know, maybe not a lot of us that don't follow La Liga don't know about, that maybe we should be looking out for, or by the end of the season, a team that we, you know, might surprise a few people that didn't expect them to do so well this season?
Well, I think perhaps not a huge surprise, but I think Valencia are going to build on last year's success. Valencia obviously came fourth. They were second for quite some time last season. And yeah, I think they've recruited well over the summer. I think Cheryshev is a good signing for them. I think Batshuayi on loan is a good deal. Marcelino is a great coach who is really getting the best out of his players and improving them. So I think Valencia for the top four, perhaps even outsiders for the top three, I think they can be really successful this season. I think Sevilla as well will be interesting. They have Pablo Machin as coach. He was the coach of Girona last season, and Girona you know, came up and were expected to really struggle, but managed a top half finish in La Liga, and that was playing three at the back. So that's going to be interesting to see him, a bigger club in Sevilla and with more talent at his disposal. I think they'll do really well. I think Betis are great to watch. All right, they didn't have a good result in their first game. But they're for me, the best team to watch in La Liga. Absolutely fantastic. So keep an eye on them. And in terms of a player, I don't know if you saw José Luis Morales. He's a 31-year-old Spanish winger. Maybe gone under the radar a little bit throughout his career in terms of international fans. But his goal for Levante against Betis on Friday was absolutely fantastic. If you haven't seen it, then go to Twitter or YouTube or Google or somewhere and check out his goal. It's absolutely amazing.
I'm on YouTube as we speak. Listen, Ben, thank you much for your time, pal.
Thanks a lot, Jordan. Cheers, speak to you soon.
Take it easy. Yeah. And we've just heard there from Ben, and I want to get you lot's view on things that are happening in La Liga. I'll start with you, Francesco. I wanted to go into a bit more detail on a different pod and give his own section, but just briefly, what have you made of the decision that was announced last week that they're going to be taking one La Liga game to the MLS? It's rumoured to be Betis versus Barcelona. I think it's a 15-year deal they've signed and agreed with it. Do you think, from the fans' perspective, that will, if it looks like it's going to come to England as well, is that a problem for English fans and English football? Or do you see positives in this kind of globalisation of the game?
I think you can't stand in the way of progress, whether we like it or not. The traditionalists won't, obviously, because, you know, you have home and away. Why are we sending a bunch of players to go and play somewhere where there are no even home or away fans? You have to sort of spend however much money. La Liga are trying to increase their brand at the same time. They've lost Ronaldo. I mean, I think their game on the weekend, that's the lowest gate they've had in 9 years at the Bernabeu.
Okay, wow.
Since, you know, with Ronaldo having left. Obviously, Barca are not the force they used to be, so I think they're trying to move things along. And obviously, the States has a huge Latin American contingent, so that's why they've sent it over there. I think someone was making an interesting point on radio last night, which I'm going to recycle. This isn't my point. that Spanish fans are more annoyed by matches kicking off at 10 p.m. than they are about this.
Yeah.
And that's kind of... It's for the same reason, because they're trying to send it to in the other direction, east, to send Real Madrid games out to Asia and the betting markets over there and whatnot. I mean, why not? Why not? I think if you look at what the NFL and NBA games have done here, the ones that have come here, they've generated massive excitement amongst kids and whatnot. And having more competitive international teams, having a competitive China and USA football team in 20 years would be pretty cool. But having more big international teams, not just the same six, shall we say.
But if it's just at the cost of, you know, because I'm not sure, the reason why I don't think it would work with English clubs is because a big part of English football is the away fan experience.
Yeah, in Spain, that's not as prevalent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And even in Italy, I don't think Italian fans travel in the kind of numbers that we do in this country.
A bit less. I mean, it's kind of, since we won the World Cup, the international team has been followed a bit more. There's like a kind of an ultras core around Italy.
Okay.
And there are definitely travelling fans for the bigger teams. I think our issue in Serie A is more general gate receipts and our stadia, a lot of which are decrepit.
Sure.
And that's why people like Roma and AC and whatnot are looking at new stadiums.
But I'm just not so sure that it will work in this country, because I'm not sure that English fans will buy into it. Now, as Francesco says, it might be a case of, well, we're doing it, so whether we like it or not.
Yeah. But whether they're going to buy into it or not, like, it's coming. Isn't it?
Mm.
Like, it's going to happen. Like, we've already had the NFL over here. As soon as the Liga starts doing that, they're already talking about playing like some sort of winter game friendly or something somewhere. Yeah.
Morocco, right. Is it? Or did they play what did they play?
I think they've done Super it. I think Cup. This season or something is going to happen. Yeah. I think the English League or something. I don't know. But like, it's going to happen. Football is just becoming more internationalised.
Right? And is that a good thing?
Why not? Like, I'm not a person. I'm not really a traditionalist like that. I'm not a person who stands.
Does it make it fair? Because if you've got Leicester v Man United,
well, who said there's not Leicester fans in the US?
No. But I mean, fair in terms of the league, because, you know, if it's a home game that Leicester would have had, for example, Leicester might say, "Well, we're losing a home game."
But, like, this is the thing. Like, this is like, we have to realize where we're going. There ain't gonna be such a thing as home and away one day. Like, we just got to accept it.
European, like, Super League.
Exactly. It ain't going to be such a thing. The football's just going to travel around the world. They're already doing it with the World Cup now.
Yeah.
Like, putting Euros it in different countries and the Euros and that.
Yeah.
So,
that's where we're going.
That's where we're going.
We'll come back to that in a bit more detail in another pod. Basil, I'm tipping Atletico for La Liga title. Tell me why I'm talking nonsense.
It's a difficult one, because The difference between Atletico have a fantastic manager and a fantastic squad. The difference between Atletico and Real Madrid and Barcelona is that Real Madrid and Barcelona have a winner mentality. So, and they know how to impose themselves against the smaller teams. And I think that's what sometimes lets Atletico Madrid down. They can compete with anybody on their day, but I think against certain teams, they don't really know how to impose themselves and have that killer instinct that once we scored one or two, we're going to score another seven. Barcelona and Real Madrid, once they've scored one or two, they steamroll teams. They know how to steamroll teams. And I think that's what Atletico need to sort of develop. They can go 1-0 up and concede a goal and then make things difficult for them to score that second. And I think once they learn how to sort of do that, I think they can become a four. They can win more than just the one league title that they won in recent years. But I think that's what lets them down, and that's what let them down last season. Had a slow start to the season, then caught up with Barcelona at one stage, and then Messi scored that fantastic free kick to put them away. But they were very inconsistent against some of the teams that they should have beaten during the league. And I think Barcelona, Real Madrid, obviously not last season, they focused more on the Champions League, but Barcelona knew how to put other teams to the sword just through that quality they have.
Josh, what are you saying, man? Like, they brought in Lamar, Gelson Martins. They managed to keep Oblak and Griezmann. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got some key players there. And what I find interesting about the Atletico team as well is that their star players, none of them are agitating for a move. They seem to be really happy and content to stay there and play
Griezmann,
for Simeone.
Griezmann hasn't been like doing
all right. Okay, yeah, you dumb me there.
Atletico are a good team. I think Diego Costa, he has a really good season.
They've got arguably the best two centre-back pair in Europe.
Challenge, right? But I always hear it. Barcelona are not the force that they are anymore. Or like, obviously, like, because Ronaldo's left Real Madrid, right?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, people are thinking they're not going to be as good. And obviously, because Atletico won the Super Cup. Mm. I can't see it going past Barca right now, because at the end of the day, they've just got the best player in the league. And now Ronaldo's gone, it's just going to be even more terrible for everyone else.
Even just that, I think it's more the culture from the top. I think Barcelona and Real Madrid, their culture is that being second is unacceptable for certain managers. It costs you their job.
Well, sometimes they win the league and still get sacked.
Capello, Ancelotti won La Decima and got sacked. Didn't
Capello won the league with him and got sacked. Who's in it? Even what's it?
Pellegrini,
ex Bayern manager, when he was
Heinkes.
Won the Champions League and got sacked. And I think Atletico, because they're just starting out, they think being second or third is like, you know, is progress in a way. Whereas at Barcelona and Real Madrid, because they know that the level is so high, they sort of is filtered throughout the entire club, from the players, even to the fans. You see the fans waving their white napkins whenever they lose one match. It's hysteria. It's hysteria out there. But because that's filtered through those clubs, they're used to sort of, we go to teams like Girona, we go to teams like Levante, we're expected to put on a show and steal on it. Whereas Atletico, if they win something like 2-1, everyone's happy. And so I think until that culture sort of changes, it could be very difficult for them.
Interesting. I think, Francesco, if you look at the squad that Real have and the manager they have, in comparison to the squad that Atletico have and their manager, who would you put as favourites to come second if we go with Josh's line that he thinks that Barca are going to win it again?
I'll be honest, I don't know that much about Lopetegui. I mean, where was he before Spain? Was he Real under 21?
Shocking. Wasn't he in Sporting Lisbon, or one of them Portuguese teams? And he was a meme. They made him a meme. He's so bad.
How did he get the Spain job? Sorry, excuse my ignorance.
Didn't he come through under 21s or something?
Yeah, I think he was Spanish under 21s and then came through. Yeah. Like, I mean, the Spanish under 21s were bloody good. I remember when they destroyed us 4-0 in the final 2-3 years ago. But
I'm not having Lopetegui.
No.
The thing is that, I tell you what, I think something we forget is that the Spanish window isn't closed. So it's a little bit difficult to judge. You know, like I said to you earlier, I pulled out all my little stats and stuff. It's my first ever podcast.
Let's use it.
I'm here with. So I was looking at how much each league had spent, right? Yeah. And Serie A is second in spending to the Premier League.
Mm.
But then I remembered, I don't even think I can use that stat because the Bundesliga, Liga,
and
Spain can still spend. Mm. So I can just throw these bloody bits of paper in the bin. Real Madrid can still strengthen, and I don't know, I would have thought that after losing that that fine, the European Super Cup, that the fans will be wanting a signing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fine. I always find this the post World Cup season really funny. It's tougher to call than other seasons.
Okay. Just finally, Josh, I'll finish with you, or all three of you actually. Is there anybody beyond the top three, player or club wise, that you think we should be looking out for? Might do a ting this year. Is there anyone else in the rest of the La Liga that?
Oh, in La Liga.
Mm.
Oh.
Anybody got any?
It's a tough one because the other teams, as talented as they are football wise,
yeah,
they're so inconsistent. It's unbelievable. I mean, Valencia were challenging Barcelona for like the first third of the season last season, and they sort of just fell off. And it's a difficult to one. Maybe Sevilla may just take fourth, but even that is a punt because you don't know what team you're going to get from them. I mean, they did look good over the weekend, but who knows?
I don't know. Like last season, last season Valencia were pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Like they had a good run, but I can't see beyond the top three teams really.
No one doing
like,
anything.
Not really.
And finally, guys, Champions League. Who's our money on for Champions League this year?
Wow.
Start with you, Josh.
Me. Oh jeez, who's gonna win Champions League? Do you know what? Yeah. I'm gonna say Juventus.
Yay! So I don't have to say it. Good. So I don't hex my boys.
Let's say even I think like two finals in the last 4 years. They only got knocked out last year by Real Madrid, the eventual winners. I think they're a quality team. I think with Ronaldo in there now, Bonucci coming back. I would have liked them to get another midfielder. Then I would have been like, yeah. They're going to do it. But yeah. I think they're a really, really good team. I think they're really underrated.
Okay. Basil?
I wanted to say Juventus, but honestly, I don't want Ronaldo to win another championship. I will never hear the end of it. And I think that would just end the Messi. Even though Messi's the better player,
yeah,
but I think it would just end the debate as to who's the greater individual.
He's a machine, that guy.
Yeah. So I'm going to go Barcelona.
Barca, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, fresh. I've not made up my mind yet who I'm going to...
What do you mean? You can't be on the fence.
I'm the host. I live on the fence.
He secretly wants to say Tottenham.
Because the main three, probably.
What about City?
Well, I'm say the main
this
three
is,
are probably...
I was about to City, say... Ventus, and they're my biggest concern for us. These tournaments, you have to have a certain amount of luck, injuries, all sorts of things. But I think sort of man-for-man gameplay, I think we struggle the most against them, against City. That's who would undo us well and truly. I mean, Spurs undid us well and truly. but, you know, moments. I often say this to people, football's about moments, and Allegri created two moments with two masterstroke substitutions, overloading that side and then the right side and then going through the middle for the second goal for Dybala. So we can do that. We've got that pedigree, that mentality that you talked about, which Chiellini talked about after the game, that PSG and City maybe don't have yet.
Yeah.
But City are scary.
Your best 11, is it better than their best 11?
No. We've got a better defence. But
I mean, your front four isn't bad.
Yeah, but their midfield is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
There's a lot there. There's
and Szczesny is a big question mark this season for us.
Is he popular amongst Juventus fans?
He is.
Okay. I like Szczesny.
Is he popular because he's liked or because he's a good keeper? Because Arsenal fans love Szczesny.
No, but the thing is,
they love him because he's a joker and he's good on Instagram and he's.
Yeah, and
we
look,
hate Tottenham, but is he actually liked because he's a top keeper?
As well as being half Italian, I'm also half Polish, so he's my compatriot. He's my boy.
He's the dream keeper.
But I have also seen him play for Poland and do some ridiculous things. Now, last season when he came in, we almost beat the clean sheet record. This was when Buffon was injured. And we didn't rush Buffon back because Szczesny was being so good, because he was playing so well. But that's when he had no pressure on him. This season is pressure, so I can just imagine him doing something wacky.
A madness.
But he was good the season before Roma as well, wasn't he?
He was.
Don't get me wrong. Yeah, but,
was,
you know,
really
there's being good and there's...
Yeah, I know.
In the big moments.
But then again, I think Keylor Navas doesn't get the credit that he deserves.
The issue with him, he's a fantastic shot stopper, but he's not... he's not a commanding goalkeeper and he's prone to errors, which is why they've always called for him to leave, because what saves his bacon is ability to
score more goals.
You're actually right there.
Let's leave it there, guys. Francesco, your first pod. You can relax now.
Oh, God.
You've done well. Thanks for coming on the
pod, man.
Thank
you for having me, guys. Enjoyed that.
Josh, Basil, thanks for coming on the pod once again.
It's been a pleasure.
I want to make a big shout out to all you guys that are listening out there. We want some more comments and reviews. You guys are very good at following. You guys are very, very good at messaging us. We want some more comments. So we're on iTunes, Football Fans Podcast. We're on Spotify as well. We're on Audio Boom. Hit us up on Instagram as you do. Also on the Facebook and Twitter, FFP_11. Until next week, peace.